1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dispossessed and I'm doing bad. I need me some cash money. Out in the streets the times are tough. Grab me a cup, play blind man's bluff. I need me some cash money. Somebody!
Help me please somebody.
Well my belt is tight and I'm feeling the squeeze. Well I'm on my knees, won't you help me please?
Being broke
and funny. Well I wanna laugh but I got to cry. Talking ammo anyway.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you. Yesterday, we had Cindy Campbell on as we were looking at the 49th anniversary of hip-hop, or its birthday, the one that many people agreed upon. And I wanted to continue that conversation and talk to people who have been around from, you know, its early days. One of them is one of our elders, one of the elder statesmen in hip-hop. We call him a historian's historian, and his name is Charlie Rock. I started off with a record, and I had to bring it back from the past. It is Charlie Rock and the B Avenue Boogie Boys. Is that the name of the group?
Actually, the Avenue B Boogie Band.
That's right. Avenue B Boogie Band. Cash Money. You know, as I'm listening to that, man, it goes back to a day of innocence, you know, like everybody was just trying to feel their way. But for people around that time, I guess it was 1980, you all did that record.
Yes.
That seemed like a
81.
81. What was that like? Because that's coming on the heels of, you know, Sugar Hill and everybody, and people are just starting to get their feet wet, and it seemed like hip hop was taking a turn to now start to expand.
Yes. Okay, so when you say what it was like, when you say in terms of that, if you could be more specific, you mean the atmosphere, what it,
yeah, specifically, the atmosphere, that sound on your record, and just a general idea of coming from a time when people were just doing dances and parties in the park and at, you know, at clubs here and there, to finally yes. start to see this culture, this expression start to get put on wax. And it just seemed like to me, remembering back that far, that it seemed like a whole new world was opening.
Well, let me tell you, you know, as I said, you know, we've talked often, so you know me in terms of my history. I go back to like just about almost the very beginnings of it all, 73, 74.
Right.
You know, as a young teenager, dancing and all those kind of things. As a B-boy, one of the original B-boys, all of that. You
right.
know, at the Cool Herc parties, all of that. And to be very honest, the rap part of it, or the MC part of it, you know, in the very beginning, because, you know, MC and, you know, various, not necessarily all rhymes, there were different styles.
Mm-hmm.
You had the disco style MC, By that, I mean like people like Starsky, Love Boy, Bug Starsky. But basically the disco style of MC was more like the radio, Frankie Crocker kind of thing.
Right.
And it relied more on vocal timbre. Like, you know, your voice, like, baby, da, 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 you know, that.
Yeah, hey, everybody.
And the rhymes weren't as, you know, integral to the process.
Right.
As hip hop, or what came to be known as hip hop, evolved. And as you know, hip hop is a youth-oriented medium, right? And you started, as the other MCs like Melly Mel and everybody, it moved in a different direction, more like the nursery rhyme style.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that is the style that, from a commercial perspective, caught on.
Mm.
Okay? Meaning that's what led to what is today the multi-billion-dollar industry of rap.
Right.
Okay? So I say that to say, when it first came out, I was just, you know, we were doing our little MC thing and all that kind of good stuff. But, you know, Herc and I have talked about this before. If you had said to us way back then that hip hop would be, what is it, like this, the number one global culture in the world, this multi-billion dollar industry, probably be like, yeah, you know, we would have laughed at you or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that was my reaction at the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're having a good time, you know, dancing. It was really about, you know, getting some girls, you know, street cred, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, I guess street legend, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, I don't think at the time anybody was thinking about it from an entrepreneurial, I mean, to a degree from an entrepreneurial sense, but not to the level that it is today, like this very professional, you know,
right,
ultra professional thing. So well, I say all of that to say that the atmosphere then is really a party atmosphere. It was fun. When I was approached to do Cash Money, for example, and that was through Bambaataa.
Okay.
Okay. As I think you know, I'm one of the earliest members of what eventually came to be known as the Soul Sonic Force.
That's right. Original okay. member. Yeah.
Right. All right. So, you know, we're talking about mid-70s, all that kind of stuff. So I was emceeing, doing all that stuff. And but prior to BAM, I used to MC with a childhood friend of mine who was a DJ, Glenn Ferguson, better known as DJ Mastermind. And we had a crew, Superior Force. And again, wow. I had that type of voice, even as you hear me now, like sound of the way I sound now as far as vocal timbre is concerned, that's how I sounded at 15.
Oh wow. So you had a golden voice, so to speak, back then.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. As far as oratory, all that. Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, I fit that criteria. What's all right. Mean? So, you know, by this time, you know, I'm kind of known in the neighborhood, emceeing all those various things. And I was in a club called the T Connection up in the Bronx.
Gun Hill Road.
Right. Huh?
Gun Hill Road.
Exactly, exactly. I lived right across the street in the projects. Anyway, and BAM, you know, like I said, once again, I'm, you know, one of the original 11 Zulu Kings and all of that. And so I'm in the club and BAM comes to me and says, Charlie, you know, that Charlie Rock, a guy named Billy Mercy was looking for an MC to do this record, Cash Money. And, you know, we're laughing. Like I said, we're all part of BAM's crew, Soul Sonic, whatever. And they were looking very specifically for someone who had the more disco style of voice.
Ah, okay.
So BAM said, yo, Charlie, go see this guy, da-da-da. This turned out to be Billy Mercy and a woman named Rose McCoy. These are the people who actually wrote the record, Cash Money. And so I go to the studio and, you know, everything is written. I literally had nothing to do with it except for maybe one of the hooks in it.
Right.
I didn't have anything to do with the creation of the actual lyrics. You know what I mean? I'm the voice, in other words.
Right.
Okay. And I'm like, okay, you know, like I said, when I did it, you know, I was, you know, a street cat too. So I was making money. So it wasn't the issue of money. I had money when I came to the studio, I had a nice amount of money in my pocket.
Okay.
You know, without getting into deep tea, because I was hustling and doing other things. So it wasn't about the money. It was more about the ego and, you know, I want to make a record, that kind of thing. And I'm saying this is the very early, early days of recorded rap.
Mm-hmm.
You figure King Kim the Third and Sugar Hill Gang, all that, all came out in 1979. So you figure this is 1981. So very early years.
Well,
I do the record and it's cool, you know, got a few dollars, a couple hundred dollars, whatever it was, you know. And that was that. You know, I think, in hindsight, you know, again, hindsight is 2020. I pretty probably done something very different, been more active in the creative aspects of it and everything. But at the time, I was just looking, hey, man, you know, having your name, all that kind of thing. I really wasn't taking it seriously. Let's put it like that.
Well, like you said, this was a fun thing and it was a party thing. And in 2020, we can look back and say, well, damn, you should have really, you know, did A, B, and C. But at that time, like you said, this is a fun thing. I wanted to have you on Charlie Rock specifically. And, you know, I figured since I had you on, I would play that record because might be a collector's item at this point.
They say it is. So I yes.
But I wanted to have you on because we often hear the story about the landmark party, you know, that Herc and his sister did August 11th, 1973. But that's one narrative that we often hear. And we know about the Bam and Flash trilogy. That's the narrative that a lot of people dig into. But I wanted to have you on because there are these other narratives that I think are important. And as you alluded to, you're an original Zulu King, an original B-boy, one of those first to really venture out and start doing the things that others would eventually pattern themselves out. And so I wanted to talk to you because you're a triple threat, the guy that had street cred, the guy that was a B-boy's B-boy, and of course, somebody who was able to flow on the mic. So let's go back to the 70s. And
yes.
From your perspective, what do you think is missing when we talk about that early days? You know, what do you think people kind of overlook that should be noted, especially with somebody of your history and prestige coming out at that time?
It's an interesting question because it depends on the direction you want to come from a level of positivity or negativity, either or.
Right.
One of the things that I say about that, because again, you hear like these narratives like peace, unity, having fun, and you know these other narratives. Well, it started because of the gangs and you know, instead of fighting, you know, they wanted to be peaceful, and you know, which is very romantic, you know, but quite frankly, is crap. Okay. You know, the culture at the time reflected the culture of the streets during that era.
Right.
Gangs, you know, violence, you know, all street, you know, street elements. And, you know, there were fights, there were deaths, there were all the things that you can associate with the street, negative as well as positive. So
right.
I think when I say all that, I say is that what is missing is a truthful narrative of what the times were like that eliminates all the romanticism of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you need to really just, this is what it was. It was gritty. You know, it could be very violent at times. Also could be very fun. It was all of the above. And I think what happens is, as the years have gone on, people have created this very fictionalized or romanticized narrative about it. You know, this whole, well, from the streets of the South Bronx, these kids with nothing created, you know, and I'm like, you know, bullcrap. That's all I can really say. I'm trying to be way to put it.
But do you feel that way? Because I think that, you know, at any given time, whether we're talking about 2022 and in any given city, You know, you're in the Bronx, I'm in Oakland, you know, somebody's listening in Houston, and somebody's listening in Atlanta. We can look out in our respective areas and we can say there's a grittiness, there's a street culture, there's the challenges that have always existed in our neighborhoods, you know, for systemic reasons. But at the same time, I think credit should be given and it should be celebrated that people who came from that background oftentimes managed to thrive. So, you know, I look at somebody like you and you came from that street background, but you're also a scholar with a PhD and degrees and, you know, and a lot of other things that, you know, would suggest that, hey, somebody was able to see the bottom of the barrel at a time when folks were ignoring large swaths of the population and managed to do it and be a builder to a culture that, you know, is being celebrated around the world. I want to take those credits and I don't know if it's romanticizing, but I think it's something to be celebrated because, you know, it came from the dirt and look at the shine that it has now all around.
Oh, and when you say that, understand that I'm not saying that it should be celebrated. That's definitely not what I'm saying. Right. What I am saying is that it should be a fully truthful narrative.
I hear you.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, definitely not all negative.
Yes.
But also, like I said, I've heard, like, I've heard people like KRS-One. Who, you know, being respectfully, let me just respectfully say, says things that are, in my, not opinion, that I factually know are nonsense.
Right.
And in a man, and I think it's, in my opinion, attempting to display an erudition that he may or may not, well, not may or may not, just a false erudition. Right. Let's put it like that. Okay, so what I'm saying is that the narrative needs to be fully truthful. You know what I mean? Like, all the beauty of it, but all the grit too. Just needs to be honest.
Right.
That's the piece that I'm saying. Okay, so to be more, you know, the honesty of it all is what's missing a lot of times. That's what I think.
I hear you on that. And I think people are kind of understanding that you have to look at all sides of a scenario so that you can really build off it more accurately. So one of the things that I'm always been fascinated with, and I want to see if you could talk a little bit about this. Let's talk about the dance, because right now it is rap heavy. And I even started off with a rap, but one might argue we wouldn't know about this culture had it not been for the dance and the type of language and the type of fascination and the type of penetration, you know, and the capturing of imagination that, you know, body movement did way before we heard the microphones. And so let's go back to your days as an early B-boy in Zulu King. How does that come about and what really shined for you in terms of the dance aspect?
Okay, so first of all, you are 100% correct. And you know me well and read things and we talk. I've said countless times, the X factor and the foundation of the culture of hip hop is the B-boy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. That's the X factor. There have always been DJs of various types. There's always been music, disco, whatever. The thing that was the line of demarcation, the X factor, is the B-boy. That is the thing that defined what came to be known as hip hop. If you remove the B-boy, it's like any other party.
Right.
A DJ, music, even an MC.
Now, for people who don't know, what would the B-boy be? What would the B-boy be, girl? What would that be? How would we know that you were that versus somebody who just showed up at a party?
Okay, the B-boy, as you know, B, the term, the B in B-boy stands for break.
Right.
And obviously, as I'm sure you know, and for those who may not know, Kool Herc is the person who originated the phrase B-boy right. at his parties. Make way for the B-boys. And the B-boy basically was a style of dance that relied on a lot of floor moves, energy, acrobatics. It was, I don't necessarily want to use the word less refined, because I don't think that's totally inaccurate. Just a different style from, let's say, the disco people who were dancers, shoes, you know,
right?
Very urbane. For right.
they were doing the hustle back in those days.
Exactly. Right. Now I can do that too because I'm a dancer. Right. But you know what I mean. But the B-boy part of it was really more the street oriented aspect of partying. So we're talking about young boys and girls at the time, you know, sneakers, you know, dancing, doing our moves on the floor, whatever it was. And the thing is that the other element, the disco style element, they looked at us with a level of disdain. Mm. Like, you know, some of the terms, like I said, even fact that the term hip hop itself, and again, yes, in terms of rap, it was coined by my man Cowboy Keith Wiggins. God bless my man. God bless him. You know, rest in peace. Definitely my people. So from that perspective. But in terms of the word itself, its original use was as a pejorative that referred to the B-boys. Mm. And it had to do because we, you know, bouncing up and down, you know, the style of B-boy dancing, you know, on the floor and everything.
Right.
So it was looked at disdain, like hippity hoppers, rabbits,
or boing oings.
All those things.
Yeah.
And hippity hoppers. And that's where the original coinage of the phrase comes from. So I say that to say that there was a certain energy involved with it.
Right.
There was also, and it was only going to be in certain places. Because as I said, you had people who looked upon us with disdain.
Right. The first time I seen, you know, the dance was in 1976 on the Circle Line, you know, which is a boat for people who don't know that travels up the Hudson. And
yes.
I remember, you know, there was a guy that was playing Jam on the Groove.
And, Ralph McDonald.
Right, Ralph McDonald. And what caught me was he kept playing the record over and over again. I didn't know the name of the song. I just like, man, that drum beat just keeps going. And these people were on the floor and they were putting their leg behind their one knee, going to the floor and spinning, right? And I remember asking somebody, you know, I'm just a kid, what is that? And the man, they're breaking. And it's like, what is it? What do you mean? He said, that's the dance, man. They're breaking. And that's the break beat that he's playing. That's what I remember. So at that time, I didn't see anybody doing the fancy stuff like spinning on their back. But walk us through it in terms of how you recall, you know, what were those early dances? You know, when did we start seeing the spinning on the back and all the fancy stuff? And I'm asking because, you know, next year, 2024, those early dances that you all pioneered are going to be in the Olympics. And I want to get your take even just on that, you know?
Okay, so when b-boying or breaking or whatever, as you know, as a number of different terms using in the early 70s, I'm talking like 73, or what we call the burning era.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was less of the spinning. It was still, you know, more freestyle moves, but less of the spinning. I would say as far as the spinning, what you see as the modern b-boy really begins around 1974. 73, you have people like my man Trixie, Dancing Doug Cologne,
right?
Sasa, people like that. And they're doing the burning moves. You know, all of it's part of the evolution of the process.
And when you say burning,
it's different.
When you say burning was more like a contest, right? And coming up with moves to kind of one up your opponent. Was that what that was?
Yeah. Embarrass them, one up them, whatever. You know, various terminology you want to use for it. Yes.
Did you have a special burning move that you did?
Oh, when I was younger, like, you know, dropping back, you know, mushing, things like that. I really got much, much, much better in terms of the reputation when it started moving more into the B-boy thing with the floor spins and all of that stuff, you know? But like I said, the burning part, I mean, that was all cool. And again, it was, you know, as it evolved, it started moving toward the floor. We're talking about now Clark Kent, the Twins, James Bond, that kind. That's where you start seeing the spinning on the floor and everything like that. The more modern looking B-boy. And as it continued to progress, more and more moves were added. And one of the major innovations that brought the things like the back spins, the head spins, was in like the early 80s, particularly when they started doing the street like with the cardboard and linoleum. Okay, you know what I mean? Like the cardboard on the floor, because that allowed you to do some other things. So that was part of the evolutionary process. So again, off in the 70s, just continued to keep evolving to where you see the back spins, the head spins, all those things. So it's an evolutionary process. And what I like to say to people, because, you know, I've had numerous debates over the course of years. Well, that's not being, I'm like, let me explain to you something. All of it is. It's like, and the analogy that I use is the automobile, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a Model T Ford, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have like a 2000 whatever Lamborghini. You look at them, it's like, damn, that's that. But at the end of the day, that Lamborghini would not exist had there not been a Model T Ford 100 years prior.
That's true.
Okay. So regardless of, you say, well, this is that, it's all connected. You know, it's part of the evolutionary process.
Right.
You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, even though there are some significantly different elements, for all intents and purposes, the basic elements of it are still there, just like it was in 1974, as it is in 2024.
If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Charlie Rock, original B-boy, Zulu King, talking about, you know, celebrating hip-hop history as we're looking at its 49th anniversary or birthday. Charlie, I want to come back.
Actually coming up on the 50th, actually.
Yeah,
depending on who you talk to. It's really 50, but yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you this, and we've talked about this, but how, you know, now that we're looking back, a lot of people are looking at the various dance cultures that have come up in different cities, Philadelphia, out here in the Bay. You know, people are looking at these dance movements that kind of inform kids on the block, you know.
Yes.
L.A., same thing, right?
Yes.
So there's a robust history out here in the Bay, you know, with people having the boogalooing and the strutting and the roboting and things that they look back and are going, yeah, these were things that we were doing late 60s into the 70s. And I wanted to know two things. One, what were the things that influenced the movements that you were doing? Was it a James Brown? Was it some other things? And two, at a young age, were you aware of other places that had these fancy dance things that were going on? You know, did you ever maybe go down south and say, man, they got some moves, let me pick up on that, or vice versa? Were you aware of any of these incredible dances that might have been going on in other parts of the country?
Well, let me say it like this. First of all, I think as far as for me or anybody else, but speaking for me, there is no way you could not be aware that there were other dancing in other places for one simple thing, and that one simple thing is Soul Train.
Mm-hmm.
The television show I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Now. That was one of the major early influences. So we're talking about the late 60s, early 70s. All right. And now remember, Soul Train is in California.
Right.
And you're seeing all of that. And, you know, okay, you know, so we see why, you know, every Saturday, I think, I doubt that there's any African-American child of that era who didn't watch Soul Train on a Saturday morning.
I think everybody did all around the country.
All around the country, exactly.
So did you take any moves? Did you look at something and say, might have to add that to the repertoire?
I don't know. If I think about it, maybe unconsciously or consciously, probably so. I could definitely tell you that I was very aware of it, right, without a doubt. And, you know, if I look back, I'll probably say, yeah, I might have seen that, so whatever. But more to the point, Soul Train was definitely an influence where dancing and b-boying was concerned. And I'll even, in fact, be more specific, and this refers very specifically to the West Coast, the locker dancers.
Mm.
Okay, because, I mean, you're familiar with them, Don Campbell and
May he rest all in peace, yeah.
May he rest in peace, and my girl. And I laugh about it because I'm sure there are people who do know, you know, like I do, and then there are probably who don't. Tony Basil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mickey, okay. You're so fine. That's what we know as the singer, but she was a dancer. Yeah.
Or the mother of B-boy, B-girls, as far as I'm concerned, she was a dancer. She is one of the original locker dancers. Her Shabba-Doo, my man Shabba-Doo.
Hey, rest in peace. Yeah.
Absolutely. Those are the locker dancers. And people, I think, at that time don't realize that same Tony Bat, oh, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine. You're so fine. That is Tony Bat. If you ever look at old footage of the locker dancers on Soul Train, and there's a little white girl with a little funny little clown hat, and she's nice, but that's Tony Basil.
Right.
That is Tony Basil. So I'm saying that to say that the West Coast and East Coast, even though I didn't think of it at the time, without question was definitely an influence in terms of dancing for me, I'm certain for other people. You know, and to answer your question, yes, I was aware. I don't know if I necessarily made a direct correlation to what I was doing versus what they were doing, but I was certainly aware of the dance cultures that existed in other places besides New York.
Did the dances for you have meaning? Like, you know, there, we now know there was a Crip Walk and there was a Blood Dance. You know, were there a dance that, you know, that was done that kind of signified either a neighborhood or a gang affiliation or had a certain type of meaning? Like, people out here will talk about, if you was from Oakland, they knew a Richmond person because of the way they danced, and a Richmond person knew a San Franciscan because of the way they danced. There were certain movements that really were just endemic of the location citywide. Was there a Bronx move versus a Queens move or a Manhattan move, or, you know, how did that work for you when you were coming up? How did you see that?
Okay. First of all, let's start with the gang aspect of it. Very specifically, as you know, I'm an old member from back in the of the Black Spades,
right,
which at that time was the largest Black street gang in New York. We're talking about the early 70s, 1973. I was a baby Spade. And so, for example, there's a thing called the Spade Dance. And the Spade Dance is, I don't know if I would necessarily say a precursor to b-boying, but it is certainly connected to it. Okay, with the stomping and the, you know, all of those things. You know, right. So the Spade Dance, I could say, could be something like that.
And you couldn't do it unless you was a spade.
Well, I guess you could. You might get beat with the crap out of it. But the point is, you know, yeah. You know what I mean? And
right.
I'm sure every gang had their own little, I'm sure the Tomahawks, for example, in Brooklyn had their own little thing or whatever. But basically, you know, a lot of the dancing aspects of these things, you know, has a lot of its origin in the gang cultures. Okay. Now, in terms of things relating to provincial to neighborhoods, could you tell? Yeah. Different play. Like, for example, us as B-boys, and I always talk about B-boying being a thing that is very specific to the Bronx. That isn't to say that other places didn't have it, but you could clearly tell it was differences.
Right.
So, for example, in Harlem, because I, you know, I obviously it's, I hung out a lot in Harlem and the Bronx and everything like that. They were what burning or whatever you want to call it, but there was, they were more the burning style still.
Okay.
Okay. When I was B-boying. So very clearly, if you're in I'll, you'll know the difference. Same with Brooklyn. They were more like freestyling, dancing, you know, as opposed to what we were doing in the Bronx. So like, let's say if you put me somewhere and I saw four people each from a different area and I watched them dance, for all intents and purposes, I could tell you where they were from or not from.
Mm.
So in that regard, the dance styles did differ depending on where you were.
It had its language, unspoken language.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good way to put it. And definitely as far as the Bronx is concerned, like the B-boy, the modern B-boy, as you see, that's that very clearly its origin is Bronx, without a doubt. Same, let's, like when you said the West Coast, for example. If you remember the movie Breakin'.
Right.
With Shabba doing Boogaloo Shrimp. Now they called it Breakin'. Okay, cool. But if you're a B-boy, such as myself and my friends, counterparts, what have you, you see that movie and you see what we're doing, it is very clear that there is a difference.
Right.
You know, like, if I looked at that, I would say, B-boy, them niggas, you know, they're not B-boys. Excuse my language. They're not, yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, they're dancing and everything. And like I said, Shabadoo, Recipe, good brother, love, good guy. Very clearly, though, if you look at the two, you can see a very clear distinction. Even better way to put it, look at a movie like Breakin' and then look at Beach Street.
And see the difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, but they often say the dance is going to reflect the environment that you're in. Like, some would say that living in New York, you had to dance, or in the Bronx in particular, you had to dance that way. It was something about it, the water, the atmosphere, the environment that just kind of, you know, informed the move. And, you know, and when I talk to people out here, it's like, man, you know, we was going to have our fly clothes on. There's no way in the world we was ever going to be spinning on our back because that wasn't the fly thing to do with your fly gear. So you look at the way people were dressing versus, you know what I'm saying? So there was going to be that environmental type thing that informed. Would you agree with that?
Not really. And okay. Here's why. I dress fly. So we dress fly. We fly guy, you know. Quarter fields, double knits. You know, you could come looking bummy. And we were still B-boys. So I think, you know, in the sense
but you
of
weren't
that,
going to break in your quarter field and be spinning on your back or your sheepskin.
Why not?
Because it was going to get dirty. You had to take that off. Come on now. No?
Again, why not? I mean, taking off the coat, that's fine, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't going to do what I was doing.
Oh, no, no. I'm saying, yeah, but you weren't going to have those nice clothes get dirtied up like that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but...
Not a sheepskin.
Well, not a sheepskin, that quarter fields, all that kind of good stuff. But also, I'm a B-boy. That's part of my reputation, my street cred, all of that stuff. I mean, I b-boyed. I b-boyed in shoes. Like, you know, hard bottoms. All right? I mean, you talk to people who know me, they'll tell you. So it wasn't, you know, regardless of the clothing part of it, I was going to do what I was going to do.
I hear
as
you.
As far as dancing was concerned. So, I'm sure maybe somebody looked at it in that manner. For me, I don't think the clothes themselves were necessarily an influence on why we were b-boying one style versus another. I don't think the clothes had anything to do with it. Maybe more ego or reputation, how people viewed you.
Right.
I would say more that than the clothes.
You know, how do you feel about it going to the Olympics now? 40 years.
Yeah. So to preface that question, I'm part of the documentary that's with Daniel Zhao and everybody that's being done connected to the Olympics. And people have asked me that question a lot. And I'm like, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's nice that it is. My thing is, I want to see how they roll it out. And someone had asked me, well, Charlie, if you were judging what would be part of the criteria? And I'm very clear in saying that part of the judging criteria has to be rhythm.
Yeah.
And here's why I say that. I say that because regardless of however you want to put it, b-boying is a dance. It's a dance. And I don't care what kind of dance you do, whether it's the ballet, the boogaloo, the watusi, the frug, or whatever. Dancing is always to the beat of the music.
Right.
Okay? So, and this is an important piece for me. The distinction that I see in terms of B-boys today versus us back in the day, the B-boys now, they got great moves. I have no area with that. But their primary focus is on doing the moves and not necessarily dancing. Like, in other words, the acrobatics of it.
Right.
Okay? It's not saying that that's a bad thing, but I'm also saying if you're saying, quote, we're adding breakdancing to the Olympics and it's acrobatics, I would say, well, what are you adding? You already had that in the Olympics. It's called gymnastics.
Right. But even with gymnastics, when you're doing certain things, they're judging you on the music as well as your rhythm as well. So if they do that with gymnastics, they damn well sure better make that a criteria for the breaking.
Well, that's my point. Okay, so that's my thing. Make sure that's the criteria. If I was looking at it, like, it's great that you have all these moves, but if it's not with the rhythmic aspect also incorporated into it, for me, were I judging, that would be a point deduction for me.
Right. What about music? Okay. Do you feel like you have to have a particular type of music to go along with it?
Okay. Here's what I would say. Me, as a purist, I want original B-boy music. But that's my personal preference. Okay? I don't know if that's what they will do. Who knows? That is my personal preference. Me watching it, that's the thing that would make me enjoy it the most.
Right.
If they're doing it with the original beat, like Shaft in Africa, or Listen to Me, and I hope...
Baby Huey, yeah.
Baby Huey, exactly. And others, you know? But my hope is that those individuals who enter those contests, if they incorporate the history into their study, that they will do their routines, the things of that nature.
Right.
That's my opinion. I don't know if they will or not, but I hope that that's what they do. So I guess in answer to your question, yes, the music does matter to me. I would prefer that it be the original B-boy type music.
Right. You know, we're running out of time, but I want to come down to the real reason why I have you on the show this afternoon, Charlie Rock.
Absolutely, sir.
You know, I mean, we talk, you're a homie, but you did say something, so I'm going to have to ask for journalistic purposes.
Yes.
You said the original B-boy, you know, records, and you were one of these people that was at those early Kool Herc parties And I've known Herc for 30 years, and I've been asking and asking. And even as he's auctioning off his records, the brother will not tell me the songs that he had in his canon.
Yes.
You know, for journalistic purposes, you were there. What were some of these original B-Boy records as I pull out my pen and pad?
Okay. And when I say this, I'm not saying it because of her. And Herc's my man. You know that. All right. I'm just telling you some of the records. Shaft in Africa, Apache by the Incredible Bongo Band. Mm-hmm. Of course, Give It Up, Turn It Loose, James Brown. Let's see, Just Begun, Jimmy Cash a bunch.
Right, right.
Scorpio, Dennis Coffey. Get Into Something by the Isley Brothers. We mentioned Baby Huey earlier. Listen to Me.
Right, that was a jump off song.
Which one?
Baby Huey.
Oh yeah, Listen to Me is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
All right. Corazon by Creative Source.
Ah.
Love the Life You Live. And there's two versions, one by Kool and the Gang and one by Black Heat.
Right.
Funky Music is the Thing by the Dynamic Corvairs.
Right.
Let's see, there's so many.
I remember last time we had you on was for the anniversary or the passing. We did a tribute to Mano Dibango.
So Makosa, yes.
Right. And you hit me to temper, I think. No, what was it? He had
Senge?
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Senge. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. So that's another one. Yeah. And I mean, there's many more. You know what I mean? And as time went on, particularly with my man Bambada, that playlist continued to expand. Things like Mambo Number 5, Get You Some, Grab Bag. There's so many, 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 many more. But in the original can, Africano by Earth, Wind, and Fire, meaning the original Africano. Right. From That's the Way of the World, because there are two versions.
Right.
There's the one on That's the Way of the World, and There's the one on the live version.
Yeah.
Which is really not, for me, it's too fast to really be a B-Boy song. But the original Africana, awesome. Oh, the Mexican. Can't forget The Mexican.
Right.
Babe Ruth.
That's right. You know, and there's been so many versions of that, but the Babe Ruth one.
I'm talking about the original version, Babe Ruth, the original version. Okay. And like I said, you know, and many more. So those are some of them. And there are a lot more. And we're talking about not just Herc, but Herc, Flash, Bambada, and anyone who was a B-boy or slash hip-hop DJ. They played those records. And the reason that is so important is because that is the clear delineation between the B-boy DJ or the hip-hop DJ versus the disco DJ, such as a Pete DJ Jones, a DJ Hollywood, a Grandmaster Flowers, and some others who even today now say, well, we were part of hip-hop. And I'm like, and I'm not talking about their abilities. I'm talking about strictly what they played, not how they played, what they played.
Real talk.
They were not hip hop DJs because they specifically and pointedly would not play those particular songs because they did not want that particular constituency / element at their venues and parties.
Well, there you have it. Charlie Rock, man, I appreciate you coming on. Man, I finally got a list. finally got a list, you know?
Yeah, well, a partial one. There's many more. There's many, many more. One day when we sit around, I'll tell you about a lot more, but there's many more. You do have a partial list.
There you go.
But that is definitely the foundation.
There you go.
That is without question the foundation. There's many more. And we'll talk about Ed. And always, you know, Dave, you know, my man, always a pleasure to talk with you. You know that.
Definitely.
Any time when you ask me, it's like, are you kidding? Just let me know where and when.
Well, Charlie Rock, we appreciate it. A historian's historian. He was there from the beginning. Thank you for taking time out this afternoon. We're going to head on out the door. And, you know, if I have a chance, maybe I'll put one of those, you know, records on. But we'll take a break. We'll be right back.